Hello, writers. This is a podcast about NaNoWriMo where we get you ready for November. I'm Liz Leo.
And I'm Christina Horner.
And this is How to Win NaNo.
As a reminder, Liz and I are not actually affiliated with NaNoWriMo in any way. We've just won a lot. So, last year, we covered planners and pantsers in two of what I would say are some of my favorite episodes of the podcast. But it has been brought to our attention that there's another category of NaNo participant that should be represented here on the podcast. We are welcoming back guest host Katrina Hamilton to talk about what it takes to be a pantser.
Hello, I am so glad to be back. And I honestly knew that I wanted to do this episode with you while I was listening to those two last year, because I realized as I was listening that we were establishing like a Christina Liz NaNo binary, and it's definitely more of a spectrum. And specifically what I was thinking, because I definitely identify as a plantser more than anything, that it almost felt like if there was a binary between the two of you, it's like I'm not on the line. It really is like a color wheel type of spectrum.
It's like a triangle.
Yeah. And so part of what I wanted to do was tell people how I approach some of the similar things that you talked about, so that if they listen to those two episodes and were like, wow, that is not how I write at all, that they know they're not weird necessarily, that some of us do write in totally different ways and think about it in totally different ways.
I love that. And I also love that this is the episode that I have had to do the least amount of work for in the history of our podcast, because Katrina basically brought us a fully fleshed out episode.
That's true.
Plan.
Mm-hmm. You came up with the idea.
I have notes on my computer.
I love it.
I can't wait to hear.
Here, my survival kit starts with, when Christina did hers, she talked about the very first thing was having an idea. And I also need to start with an idea, but I think of it more as the one thing. So when I get excited about any sort of story, it always really starts to fire up when there's some sort of hook that is interesting to me personally. And sometimes it'll be really specific. Like it could be a pair of dialogue lines. And sometimes I can even imagine, it's almost like you're sort of vaguely seeing it in a dream of like, okay, there's like a mom character and a daughter character, and mom says this and daughter says this, and they're in like a factory, I think. Something's going wrong. Like it's, I can kind of just barely tell you what it is. But I really love that line of dialogue. Or I might have sort of an idea of what the kind of fun and games are in the middle. Or I might know the surprise ending. But there's like one specific thing that is kind of the baby that I will build the whole rest of the thing on. And it's possible that baby won't survive to the end of the book. But it's what everything kind of spiders out from.
Yeah.
So that's like where when I think of an idea, I'm looking for that one thing that I can almost picture in my head that I'm very excited about. Like, I want to write everything that lets that happen.
That's so interesting.
I think that's actually closer to how I would... I don't remember what I said for this part, but I think, like, I relate to that as a pantser more, where it's, like, I don't even need to plan. I just need to have that, like, vision.
And but you follow that.
Yeah, like... but I'm assuming you do something after that.
Yeah, it's...
where we diverge.
We'll come back to it at the, like, end of my toolkit, because it's, like, this is how it starts. The next thing that I might do could be research, but when I do research, it's almost always just engaging in the type of media that I'm kind of akin to for this idea. So like right now, my current idea for NaNo is to basically write like an Agatha Christie murder mystery novel. And so I'm just like listening to a million audiobooks of murder mysteries. Like I looked up online, what's Agatha Christie's like 10 best books? And I'm reading those. And it's just, it's engaging in the media. When I did my Magical Girls novel, I just watched a ton of anime and of as many types as I could, just trying to get an idea of like, what do I see that I like and don't like in this kind of format, in this sort of idea? What do I want to play off of? And so it's research, but it's like very rarely have I written anything that required research. I'm thinking kind of like Christina for your North Dakota book where you're actually having to like look up history and stuff.
Oh yeah. I would say 90% of the research for that book is just looking up when things were invented.
Yeah. See,
this not is as so... fun as just watching anime.
No.
This is so interesting to me because as you were saying that, I realized one of the reasons I don't do that type of research is I've mentioned that I'm really susceptible to that and I will start writing exactly like that person or getting too in my head about that type of story or repeating things. So it's almost like we have the spectrum from like, you know, actually researching events or places or something to you're doing research that's, you know, connected.
More like genre in, tone.
Genre like, tone. Whereas in like, I'm more like, I seek out really like not even adjacent, but like maybe parallel types of things like songs or art or things that aren't even in the same like category of writing to inspire me.
Yeah, it's a weird thing that my brain will do that sometimes that's hard to turn off is engaging in something and immediately trying to write my own thing similar. Like honestly, when I got a theater degree in college, and for a while after I graduated, it was actually just hard for me to go see a play.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't help but get distracted by my own ideas for writing plays. Because I'd learned so much about how to do it and the technical aspects. And so, like, I'd be able to see all the little moving parts. And it became difficult to just get engaged in the story I was watching because I was already thinking about a different story that I would be writing myself.
Yeah.
So that part's very easy for me. I think that's why I don't have the problem of falling into sort of repeating what I'm seeing is because what my brain wants to do is go write something else based on
interesting.
That.
Yeah. Which is actually like, I don't prefer it, but it's a very legitimate way to get inspiration for writing.
Yeah. So the next part of my toolkit, and this was the part that I most wanted to talk about, which is my playlist.
Ooh.
Because you both talked about how you make playlists. So Christina has a playlist of music she writes to. So it's like no lyrics, like this is put it on the headphones.
Atmospheric
so that I can write. And Liz puts together a lot of like tonal, like inspirational, get me thinking, whatever.
Music soundtrack for me.
Yeah.
Or the movie soundtrack.
Yeah. So every single book I write is secretly a jukebox musical.
That's great.
Which means I have a playlist for all of my novels where the songs on it, when I listen to them, I can picture in my head the musical number that takes place in my book.
Like in order?
To that song. Not necessarily, okay. Because the way that I build it is leading up to Nano and sometimes still during Nano, I just leave my music on shuffle and I don't let myself skip anything. And I just have to listen to it and see if I hear anything that honestly one of my characters might say. And if I hear something like that, then usually I just go back to the beginning of the song and I start listening like, is this my character talking? And what part of the book is she talking in if this is what she's saying? But they really are musical numbers. Like it's not just atmospheric or like this song reminds me of it. I'm literally picturing and assigning lines to the character.
That's
monologuing.
Yeah.
Like Moulin Rouge style.
Because the first part sounds similar to what I do where it's like I shuffle all my music, listen, and if it's a song I'll like put it in the thing or listen to it a lot. But it's very much like what's going on in the movie trailer. Whereas in your like the characters are saying those words.
So the other thing I've noticed is that because I do this then once the soundtrack, the sort of like jukebox musical has started to build, it will inevitably start to have themes, but also be very random. So, for instance, if I go to like my very first Nano, which was a kind of alternate Cinderella story, that was actually a lot of actual songs from musicals and then Adele. So it's got Rolling in the Deep and Rumor Has It and I'll Be Waiting, but then it's also got like Hellfire and the Bells of Notre Dame from Disney's Notre Dame. It's got like from Evita, it's got like the Waltz for Evan Chang, Good Night and Thank You. It's got a whole bunch of Les Mis.
So it's a very like tonally.
Yeah, and it's just like it's a weird mix of things. The sci-fi story I wrote where everybody has like different perceptions of the world and you sort of see all of them. It ended up with a lot more like alternative type of stuff and kind of lesser known and indie stuff. So it's got like Little Talks from Of Monsters and Men and like Scissor Sisters is on there. But then it's also got Celine Dion and Carole King. Like it's like such a weird everywhere type of thing that happens. But what's great is that then during November, and I'm preparing for it, at any point, I just go turn on the playlist and hit play. And like I said, they're not necessarily in order because sometimes I don't necessarily know where in the book the song would go, even if I know who's saying it. But I'll just start listening to it. And as I listen to the song, I can see the scene playing out in my head. And every time I listen to it, it just builds more and more.
So how does this actually manifest in your story? Like, have you ever actually taken lyrics from those songs and had a version of that end up in your story? Or does it just sort of inform scenes?
It usually doesn't involve direct lyrics, with like a couple of exceptions. So like one of the songs in the sci-fi story is Swim Until You Can't See Land. And I genuinely think in that scene, there's going to be an interaction where this guy is talking to sort of like this mystical child witch lady, and is like, and she's telling him he has to swim out into the ocean. And he asks, how far do I have to go? And she says, until you can't see land.
Oh, that's so cool.
And like that's part of what I liked about it is that, and when I hear that song, I hear him talking about it and going out. And then every once in a while, I hear her like singing the chorus to tell him to go out and do it.
But most of the time,
it's more like I can picture in my head the full musical number with the exact lyrics to the song. And then when I go to write the scene, it's like I write the scene from the movie before they turned it into a musical.
Oh,
that's so interesting.
If you think about like Hairspray was a movie and then a musical and then a movie musical, and each time they changed it a little bit. And so it's like I already have the musical in my head and now I write the novelization of it.
It's almost like we do opposite things, whereas in like so many times for me, because it's movie trailer, it's like compressed. So I take the moments in each of that and like expand them to a whole story. And it's like you take multiple songs and push them together. And I just realized, we each do different things with music. Christina uses music in the most like music sense, like in the art of music meant to be music that you sort of like listen to as music when you're writing.
It's to drown out distraction.
Yeah.
I use it as sound specifically.
Yeah, I use it in the most cinematic sense, which is to think of it as like movie scene music or trailer music, and use it in the most like theatrical sense, just think of it like musicals.
Inner monologues and character motivations and all of that kind of stuff.
And it's something I do all the time. I love to do it. And actually, for our most recent anthology, one of my stories in there, The Beast, was based very directly on a Laura Marling song of the same name, to the point where, like, after I had finished the story and then I listened to the song again, I'm like, is this plagiarism? Like, and then I, like, listened again. I was like, no, Katrina, you just so thoroughly, like, mapped out this scene in a way that matches the song, that it feels like the song is talking about your story. The song is not talking about your story.
Now I have to listen to that song.
I know.
It's a great song,
too.
How did
I not know this about you?
What was great about that, too, is when I was working on that, I started working on that story actually pre-pandemic, because that was a story I wrote before we even knew what that prompt was going to be. And so sometimes to get in the mood to write the story, while we were at our coffee shop with writing group, I would put in my headphones and just turn it up really loud and just listen to the entire song and then just start typing, because it's like I'm picturing it and now I can just write out what I see in my head.
That's so crazy. Yeah, I had no idea. It's amazing that we have been writing friends for this long and I didn't know this about your process.
And that was so interesting. That's part of why this was the specific thing that when I heard each of you talk about building playlists, and I was like, how do all three of us build playlists with such different ways? And also, how have we never talked about this?
Yeah, wow. I love to hear how you, like, and that inspires me to even try doing that a little bit. Yeah.
So the next item on my list, I was just thinking of the sort of practical prep, because you talked a little bit about this in terms of like, what do you do in your life to get yourself ready for Nano? To me, the biggest thing is getting what I would call admin stuff done before Nano. So things where I'm like scheduling appointments or like having to put together anything on the computer, really, that requires the part of my brain that I will use for storytelling and whatever. But alternatively, a lot of people, and you guys talked about this too, talk about like, can you get your chores done ahead of time or something so you don't have that weighing on you? But doing laundry in Nano, cleaning the house in Nano is great for me because I put on my playlist and I watch the movie of my book in my head.
Oh, yeah.
And every time I listen to these songs, I develop the scenes more and more. And as those, it's almost like my musical number scenes get developed. And suddenly I get an idea for a different scene that doesn't have a song associated with it. But now I know how that has to go because it's going to follow up or go in front of or whatever this musical number scene. Mm-hmm. So it's like I just put it on and it's like I'm listening to my own story while I'm doing laundry. And that's why I need to do the admin stuff, because I can't do that while I'm, you know, on my computer answering emails. But I can totally do that while I'm cleaning the house.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of how Liz and I talked about how, you know, she'll listen to a lot of her, like, back to the playlist thing, she'll listen to her sort of movie soundtrack music in the car during Nana. But when I'm driving in November, I do no music because I need that silence to really like think and get lost in my thoughts. And so I love that we all kind of have our different thinking.
Whereas I like writing during silence.
And during November, even more so, the only things I'm allowed to do really, like I basically let myself listen to podcasts that are about Nano. So like I listen to your guys' podcast. If I have other writing podcasts, I might listen to those. And then if it's not that, all I get to do is either listen to my playlist for this book or listen to my music without skipping anything to see if I can find new songs.
Oh, wow.
But like the big thing is I'm not, because if I let myself skip, I'll go to a song that maybe I already have an association with or I like feel like whatever.
And the whole, you're looking for the lyrics.
Yeah. And the whole point is to develop a new association with that song that I don't have, because it's not like I can just sit here and be thinking about the story that I have and be like, oh yeah, it's kind of like this song. Let me look that up and see. It really is. It just kind of has to hit me.
Whereas I can skip quickly because I'm like vibes.
No, have you ever reused a song, or once you have an association with a song, is that song like spent?
I think I have once or twice, but it is hard. It's mostly like that song is now that thing.
I think I get that. Like, there's definitely songs where I'm like, this song is this. Like, it's really hard to reuse because it's the, or like when it's the main song.
Right. So the next thing that's important for me to have before Nano is my characters. And it kind of comes into a couple of different ways. One is character voices, which is super vital for me. And it's unfortunately one that I have yet to figure out how to like manufacture on purpose. They kind of have to come at me. But if I can't hear my characters talking in my head, I can't write. And that's what's happened before. Specifically, I remember it with my Magical Girl book that I kind of had to abandon midway through the month because I was like, I've got all of the plot. I know what's going to happen. I know the like idea of this movie, the vibes of this movie. But I can't imagine even writing a conversation between these characters because I can't hear them.
All the time in the yurt just didn't do it, huh?
No.
That yurt time was a good conversation.
I was getting everybody ready and there was just, I couldn't hear them.
Do you ever picture like actors or people like who are real to get the voices?
So that leads me to my visual aid that I brought.
Oh, yay. Oh. I love a visual aid in a podcast.
I actually have two of these, but I only brought one of them. This is my inspiration binder. I'll hand this over to Liz.
Thank you. Ooh,
so
that's nice and heavy.
I'll hand Christina these, mostly because I more trust Christina to keep all the pages in the same order.
Oh yeah, I don't trust me with
that. Because they have post-its labeling like the first person, and then like the next three pages will be them.
Wow, so, these are real magazines.
Liz, can you describe what you're looking at?
I'm looking at pages ripped out of magazines, but not in a creepy way. I mean, only like minorly in a creepy way, because they're all of people. But it looks very tasteful, as in all the people that you ripped it out of, like, they, like, it's fashion-y. It's very, like, high fashion.
They're almost all from Vogue and GQ. Yes. That's mostly because I had to start finding copies of GQ because there weren't enough men in Vogue. And so that became a problem once I wanted to start having male characters.
This is awesome, and I am very inspired just by looking through it.
So, and then what Christina's looking at is folders of the images that I had that I used in actual books. So the way this works is every so often, I'll grab a couple copies of Vogue and GQ and just go through them without any story in mind, and just look for people that captivate me. There's something about them that I'm like, that person has a story behind them. And I take them out and I put them in the binder that Liz has, which is just labeled inspiration. And it's just people randomly that I found that seemed like maybe they had something
behind them. So you just have a collection when you need it.
And so then when I'm prepping for my Nano, after kind of midway through the process, when I start to like think, okay, I think I know who my characters are, then I take some out of the binder. Here, I'll let Christina look at the binder too. I take some out of the binder when I'm like, this is her. This is him. And I'll let there be more than one. So that's why there's a whole folder.
Yeah, that's important for sure.
And so it's not just one image, but I can see kind of like, this sort of looks like it could be her. And also this one's kind of her, but like maybe later in the book or something like that. And then usually I will take all those images, plaster them all over the wall in front of me at my computer, so that anytime I look up and I'm seeing my characters usually looking straight back at me, because most of these pictures from the magazines, the model is looking right at the camera, right? And so I can look at them. Sometimes, occasionally, I will even use what they're wearing as like influence to help me describe them. But most of the time, it's more the feeling that I get from these like highly editorial like photo shoots that they do in these really high-end magazine kind of things. So this is where I can get what my characters look like to me. And there's usually even when I'll have, you know, like five or six images for the main character, there's often one image that I'm like, that's her. That right there is definitely her. The other ones are also her later, you know, different parts in the book, but like, that's the one. So that's how I get my characters. And that does help their voices some, because now it's like I can kind of see them.
It's so, I love like how fleshed out this process is, because I do something similar sometimes. Like I've got, you know, I've got Pinterest boards that I've made for like various novels. And then like, especially for my historical, any historical writing that I do, I'll like, if I need to describe like a wedding dress from like the 40s, I'll like find the wedding dress and I'll just like straight up describe like, this is the wedding dress. And I have the same thing with like an old wedding ring. I like found the ring. But I love that you just do this work beforehand, just in general.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I always go looking for specific references. I love that you just have this collection of like, I know I will need this in the future.
And it's fun. Liz, I know, has a Pinterest.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you just did you basically made Pinterest, but the analog version, which I know is based off of Pinterest. Pinterest was based off of what you did.
Right. Basically. And the thing is that it's actually very important to me that I do this in the analog way.
Interesting.
Because what is helpful about it is the limitation. So I can't go down a rabbit hole.
Fascinating.
Because the first time I do it going through the magazine, I'm just going through the magazine looking to rip things up, and there's nothing in my head. I'm just like, who's captivating? Who looks like they have a story?
Who do I want to write about someday?
Who do I want to write about someday?
That's really
cool.
Who
do I think might be in my head already? Whatever. And then when it's time to go, like, I've got two binders, so I got a lot of images to work with, but still, I can't spend 3 hours going down a rabbit hole of and looking, and especially looking for like the perfect image.
Yeah.
It's like, no, just who in here kind of looks like your person?
That's really cool.
And so that's very helpful for me to both have that kind of inspiration from the outside and some randomness to it, but also really finite and controlled so that it doesn't become a distraction. Now, one other thing that I've sometimes attempted to do to help me develop the characters and find their voices is character sheets. And I mostly mention this because character sheets are highly recommended in writing things a lot. And I've very rarely gotten them to truly work.
Yeah.
Usually I start trying to make them and I never fill them all the way out.
Same.
But sometimes from trying to do them, I will get one answer to one question that then that's what I base the whole character off of. And so and you know, questions like, what's the lie they believe? What's the worst thing that could possibly happen to them? For this one, because it's a murder mystery, the question I do want to ask about all my characters is, what secret do they have that's worse than murder?
Ooh.
Because that's kind of key to most murder mysteries, is that all the suspects have something that they're hiding that is more important to them than clearing them of murder.
Yes.
Because they want to keep it hidden even when they start to get suspicious.
How cool.
Right. I love that.
So I kind of wanted to put that out there once again, since I was interested in doing this to make sure that people listening don't feel like, oh, I don't do things the way these people do it. Am I a weirdo? And it's like, if you don't find character sheets helpful, that's also very common. Not all of us do. Some people love them and it really works. I've tried it so many times and I keep trying it because I do often get these little kernels, but I don't think I have any story from any Nano with anything resembling like filled out character sheets.
No, I would say like same. And the closest I get is like usually like character motivation. So I'll do the, like, you kind of touched on this, but like, you know, what does a character want? What happens if they don't get that thing? Like, what would make that even worse? You know, I try to like know those kinds of things.
Or like, what's a secret they have?
Yeah. Or like, what needs to, like, what does a character think they want? What do they really need? Like that kind of stuff. But like doing like a classic, like MySpace quiz kind of character sheet is just usually not, because that's the kind of stuff that I find fun to discover as I write rather than like coming up with all those things ahead of time.
Totally. I hadn't really thought about it until just now, but I think part of the reason it doesn't work for me is that, and maybe this is obvious by part of how my process comes at me, I usually feel like my characters are like fully extant people that eventually show up in my brain, and then I just need to write down what they say.
You don't make it up. Yeah,
I don't make it up. And when I try to do a character sheet, it's like, what's their favorite color? I'm like, oh, green.
Then you have to have basically a seance going on.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know. I don't know them very well yet.
But the funny thing is, if it comes up in the context of the story, then it's like obvious. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, their favorite color is green, you know?
Yeah, that's one reason I pretty much just stick to the basics, because like it's sort of fun to like let myself channel it and make stuff up, but very often I will just either forget that stuff and not ever reference it.
I find it a fun thing to do after you've written a story and after you know a character to be like, how would this character answer this?
That's cool.
Because you already have spent time with them and know them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't find a lot of value in doing it before.
Yeah.
So one thing I wanted to mention as another thing that I don't use when prepping for Nano, just because it came up in one of your episodes, and I think people who know me would assume that I do this, is index cards. So I do use index cards for writing, but only after most of the story is written. So I use index cards to help me clean up and finalize a plot and fill in holes and make sure that things, the flow is good. So it's like I will have somewhere between a zero and a first draft done. And then I'll like look at it and make a bunch of index cards based on the scenes I already have and maybe scenes that I know are there but I haven't written. And then I have my index cards, and sometimes they're color coded, and depending on the story, they might have different things. So like my sci-fi story with people having different perceptions, one of the things that was represented on the index cards is like, whose perception are we in during the scene the majority of the time? So I could see like how often are we bouncing between people's heads. But I can only do that after we've done quite a lot of the work. Like it's more of a editing tool for me than a drafting tool.
I really like that.
That's super cool. Yeah, such a different approach. Because for me, it's like making sure that I have a roadmap and that it's somewhat balanced between like three acts and then also the characters. And it's like this really visual representation of whether or not I have enough of a sort of recipe to like go in and actually write. And then when I get to editing, then like index cards are no longer useful to me. So I love that this is just reiterating that there's really no wrong way to write.
Well, and I think about too, like also having a written outline. I don't think there's any book that I'm anywhere near the end of that doesn't have an outline, and I don't think any of them had one at the beginning of November.
Interesting.
I will literally use writing the outline to be some of my words in November I'm having a day where I need to write and I need to get out of my stuck place first. And so that's when I'm starting to write my outline, is after I already have some scenes down. And what I was thinking about is when it comes, coming back to the thing of like, I have a kernel of any idea that I start with. What's my one compelling thing that kind of gets me interested in the story? By the time I'm ready to write, hopefully what I have is like a handful of mileposts and maybe a destination. And it's like I've got a lot of these little things. It's almost like what I can see in my head is the trailer for the movie. It's got a lot of the high points. It's like I can see the trailer for the movie plus like maybe two or three of the scenes that once the movie's out will be uploaded to YouTube and have like a million views because it's everyone's favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
It's like I can see a couple of those scenes and I can see the trailer, and that's what I have to go into November with.
As you just said that, I think I realize why I dislike or suck at writing endings, because that's not what's in movie trailers. And I plot like pretty much everything in my novels based on what the movie trailer would look like.
Yeah. So the other thing that was interesting to me is I got the impression from both of your toolkits that you pretty much always write in order.
Yes, I have to.
So I have gotten more comfortable with skipping around, but I still skip around in chronological order.
Yeah, it's like you can skip a scene and go to the next one, but you're still...
Yeah.
I cannot do that. That's completely impossible
to me. I know. This is the biggest thing that I cannot even imagine. To the point where if I had to skip ahead, I would be like, that's just what the novel does now. It just skips ahead because clearly I didn't know what was happening. So time cut.
I will say, like, when I say I can't write in order, this goes so far as the year that from my Nano, I did a 50,000 word abridged version of Lord of the Rings that was gender swapped. So I knew the entire plot going in very well, still did not write it in order. And part of, like, while I was listening to you guys talk about that, I'm like, telling me to write a novel in order is like telling me to do a puzzle starting at the top row and going down. It's like I need to find all my edge pieces and get that squared away. And then I'm going to find, like, oh, here's a part with, like, a distinct, like, there's lots of orange pieces. So now I'm going to do all the orange pieces over here and, like, get that cleared out. And, oh, now there's a building over here. I can find the building pieces and do that. And then, like, at the very end, I do all the sky pieces that were hard to figure out.
But that's also how I do a puzzle.
The way I describe it from the top down.
No, not from the top down.
Might be a psychopath.
No. Like,
no, I just think it's interesting because thinking about the way you talked about it, I'm like, I could never do that because this one little scene that happened informs this whole relationship.
And that's how I feel, really, too.
If you don't plan it, if you actually plan things and know what things going to happen, then you can probably...
So for me, that sense of, like, I need to do this so then I know what happens here... That is why I have to write out of order.
Mm.
So I can't necessarily, sometimes I can't write the setup scene because I don't know what I'm setting up.
Interesting.
And sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes I can't write where this is going because I need to do this other thing first. But because part of my process in figuring out the story is the movie trailer and those big scenes, that's what I write first. I write the thing I can picture. I write the musical numbers that are in my playlist first because I can see those in my head already. And in writing them, that's how I get to know my characters more. That's where I start to fill in those, like, plot details that
you
we were talking about.
Make
character
stuff
details.
Up and then, like, follow through on
That's actually what I was going to say, is that this is so indicative of our various styles, because I feel like you, Liz, have to write in chronological order because you're like following a whim.
Yeah.
And you have to just, like, follow it where it goes, and skipping around doesn't make any logical sense.
Like I can only see as far as the headlights, basically.
Yeah. Blaine track in front of you the entire month.
Yeah. Whereas, like, my writing is so character heavy and so character focused that, like, I can't write a climax before I write the earlier stuff because I do not know that character yet. Mm. I have not journeyed with that character long enough to know how they would handle this climactic scene. So even if I've tried to skip ahead because I learned that people do that and was like,
I could do that, but it would be, again, this is just a braided narrative with
suddenly your novel would just start there.
Yeah. Novel. Well, and that's interesting because the way you say that, it's like, and for me, it's like, how could I write anything about my character until I know how they're going to behave in the most crucial moment of the story?
Fair.
I need to, like, know what that...
Listen, I'm the opposite. I don't know how they'd react in the most crucial moment until I know who they are normally.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Same. Yeah. Same.
And it's just, it's interesting to think about that, like, for instance, it is very hard for me to write a novel without some idea of how it's going to end. And that's actually the thing that with my sci-fi novel.
How does anything end, really? Something ends.
What is the concept of ending? Like, when I wrote my sci-fi story, one of the most difficult things for me was I could picture the climactic scene in my head, and I kept seeing, like, a bunch of different ways that it would end. So I knew what the scene was. I knew it was taking place. I knew the general idea. But because I hadn't quite decided what the point of the book was, like, what am I trying to say with this book? I kept bouncing back and forth between, like, okay, there's an ending where she does this and he does this and that's how it ends. Or there's one where he does this for, like, and it was very difficult for me for a long time. And by the way, since that book is not finished, I still do not know which of those I want to do. And I might have to finish the whole book before I can be positive.
Sure.
But what's interesting about that, though, is that that's the climax, but it's not how the book ends. And I do know how it ends. It's weird that I don't know how that conflict resolves exactly, but either way, I know where those characters end up, and I know what the last scene of the book is. I know what that looks like.
See, the difference between you two and I is that both of you seem to have some sort of semblance of control over what happens, whereas it's similar to what you said, like, I truly feel like I am watching it happen and writing it down.
I just picture Liz, like, in the woods following, like, a will-o'-the-wisp.
It's truly how
and she
I
just
write.
Goes into the woods on November 1st and then, like, maybe comes
the
out.
The more I talk to both of you, despite the fact that our process has started really similar, the more I talk to both of you, the less I think I write and more I think I just perform seances and, translate what happens.
The other thing that was interesting is when you guys had your toolkit episodes last year, you had this metaphor of Christina being a traditional actor and Liz being an improv actor.
Yeah.
And as you were saying that, I'm like, I can't even imagine a metaphor of my writing as acting. My writing is like sculpture. Like, I start with a thing of clay, and then I start like molding it, and I'm slowly getting the shape, and it's just getting closer and closer to what it is until it's done. But in that same way of like, I can't imagine writing a book start to finish, it's like do an oil painting and start in the upper left corner and just work your way down. Like, no, you can't. I can't do that. See, it's not how my novels come into being.
Christina's an oil painter, you're a sculptor, and I'm an interpretive dancer. Modern dance. Is it art or is it like a trash can that someone set up in the middle of the gallery? We'll never know.
So that is my toolkit for Plancers.
So
and
cool.
A good way for listeners to realize that it's not even just like Christina does it like this and Liz does it like this. There's so many ways to do all of this. And you can also know people for literal years and meet every single week to write and talk about writing a lot and still not realize some of the ways in which you write differently than other people.
Yeah, I really appreciate how deep we were able to go into our process here. Because I think a lot of times people ask, like, what's your writing process? And you kind of go surface level on that question. And so this was really cool to see the, like, true differences. Mm-hmm. And it's not even like, here is the toolkit for Plancers or planners or pantsers. It's like, here is a toolkit of one planner.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe you see some similarities in your process, but probably you do things completely differently as well.
I almost think that in the end, especially when once someone has like access to all three of these toolkits, they're more useful as just listen to it and see what grabs you as like, that sounds helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the stuff that you're like, I can't even imagine, ask yourself like, why not? Because maybe there's like a different version that is what you're looking for.
Yeah, like honestly, no cards have never really helped me a ton, but now I'm thinking about doing it after the fact, and that'd be really cool. Now I'm also really excited to see in the Discord any sort of, like, I want to see the hot debate on the order you write things in.
Yeah.
Because this to me is like, drama in the writing community. I really got to know.
I was so excited to like finally write a story in order when I did Lord of the Rings. And I'm just like, I got midway in through it and I'm like, I just can't. I'm going to Helm's Deep.
Whatever. Yeah. One does not simply go to Helm's Deep, Katrina. I also would love just if anyone on social media or in our Discord wants to share anything that would be in your toolkit that wasn't mentioned in any of these three episodes. Mm-hmm. I recognize that mine and Liz's episodes were a year ago. So I don't know. Go listen to them again.
And we have flair. We have flair for being a pantser, a planter, or a planner.
That's true. Yeah. You can like
add your flair on Discord.
You can self-identify.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I would love to know if you have other things in your toolkit that we didn't even touch on, because obviously we're all extremely different.
Katrina, thank you so much for coming on for this episode and also from formulating the plan a year ago and sort of planting your way onto this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
I think it really does speak to like my personality with regards to this, that there are certain elements of my life that I very deeply plan. But I do that so that I can riff on it. So I really planned out what to talk about and what to bring today so that we could just have a conversation.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, great. Thank you so much.
The episode is over. Wait, it's season 5 of Christina. What do I say? Where's my script?
Give me a second, Liz. I'm still writing it.
Okay, I can fill the space. Have I told you about how I'm learning to play the piano?
And done. Here you go.
Welcome to the end of the episode. This is Liz, who will not be talking about pianos. Hey, wait!
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you want to keep up with us between episodes, you can find us on Twitter or Instagram at HowToWinNano.
We've also got a Patreon if you want to donate and help us keep this podcast ad-free. That's patreon.com/HowToWinNano.
You can also join our Discord server full of writers, which is super active during the Nano season.
Oh, tell them about our books.
Oh, yeah. I have an indie publishing company called 84th Street Press, and we've published 3 anthologies. They feature stories written by Liz and I and a bunch of other talented authors. The newest one is called What Happened to Annabelle, and you can find it most places books are sold.
This one has a bit of a spooky vibe and a heavy dose of feminism, but each anthology is a totally different vibe, so there's something for everyone.
Thanks for listening. Until next time,
keep writing. Now I can talk about the piano.
No. Ugh. We introduce ourselves as our, like, full name, so mm-hmm. I think maybe in this one we'll...
We do? Yeah, I guess so.
I'm Christina Horner, and I'm
Liz Leo. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Liz edits these podcasts and does that in every episode.